If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
It's Friday, February 3rd, and you're listening to Michigan News from MLive. I'm Patrick Shea. We're getting weather, politics, and sports this week. We'll hear from Sherry McWhirter on what this warm winter could mean for summer plant growth and how snowpack affects soil health. Plus, a famous annual fishing event in Sheboygan could be canceled due to dangerous ice conditions. Several Michigan officials made their stance on gender-affirming healthcare clear last Friday. We'll hear more from political reporter Jordan Hermony. In sports, Michigan coach Jim Harbaugh is off to the NFL, and Sharone Moore will now take over a program in the midst of an NCAA investigation. We'll have more from Wolverines beat writer Aaron McMahon. And the Detroit Lions fell one game short of the Super Bowl, despite leading the 49ers by 17 points at halftime. But there was some good news for Lions fans this week as well. More on that towards the end of the show. That's all ahead on Michigan News from MLive. Aside from a couple snowstorms in January, it's been a mild winter for Michigan, and any snow that's left is melting fast. That's bad news for winter tourism up north, but it also has an underground impact that could last into the summer. MLive's Sherry McWhirter has been reporting on the science of snow and joins us now. Hi, Sherry.
Hi, Patrick. Nice to talk with you again.
You too. So, you wrote a story last week about the relationship between snowpack and soil. Tell us about the research you highlighted and what these scientists want to know.
Yeah, there are some researchers at the University of Michigan Biological Station up north in Pellston who are using new technology to measure changes in snowpack. The overall goal is to put more of these sensors in more places and gain a more comprehensive understanding of how climate change is impacting typical snowfall and related accumulation. And pardon the pun, but there is a deeper purpose here, and it is in the soil. The blanket of snow across the landscape provides a protective type of insulation that allows microorganisms within the ground, you know, to do their biological work that generates nutrients. And those nutrients are there in the spring and summer for plants and trees to take up through their root systems. If there is less snow and the microbes can't function as well, there are fewer nutrients in the soil. And if we experience warm-ups during the winter and it rains on top of the snowpack, which we are seeing now.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah. Sometimes the nutrients beneath the snow are then washed away into rivers and streams in the winter. And then we end up with water quality issues, and the spiral of negative impacts continues. So when you put it all together, it seems that warming temperatures lead to less snowfall, leads to fewer nutrients in the soil, leads to possible water quality problems, and results in potentially stunted summertime growth in the end. A whole disrupted natural cycle for both forestry and agriculture.
And as you've reported, they've been measuring snow depth in Pellston every morning at 8 a.m. for more than 40 years. So that's a lot of useful data they have at their disposal. But what's different about the study this winter?
Yeah, they have for decades been taking daily measurements. So this is really a matter of ramping up how detailed the data they collected is. You know, instead of morning measurements every day, they are now taking hourly readings with quite sensitive sensors. The hope is to get a more detailed picture of how the snowpack develops and then sustains throughout the winter season.
Well, stay tuned in the coming years as we learn more about what a thinner snowpack could mean for Michigan's ecosystems. And on that note, Sherry, you have another story on MLive.com that's also related to this warm winter weather. A famous fishing season up north could be canceled this year as ice conditions are pretty sketchy. Tell us more about that.
Absolutely. Yeah, the warmer winter weather isn't just impacting snowfall, but also ice formation. Ice isn't forming like it typically does on the Great Lakes, nor on our inland lakes. And Black Lake in northern Michigan is famous for hosting among the most exciting fishing opportunities the state offers. It is not an exaggeration to say that the sturgeon season on Black Lake is legendary. It typically involves using a metal spear thrown by hand through a very large hole in the ice, all from within very large shanties. Anglers consider this a really special opportunity, and it's a really unique season. The state only allows the public 6 fish. So sometimes the season lasts only a matter of hours. Last year, for example, it was only 65 minutes before the season closed. But this year, the ice on Black Lake is just outright dangerous. Deteriorating conditions are worsening every day. The DNR fisheries biologist I spoke with said the sturgeon may simply catch a break this year. The poor ice conditions may prevent ice fishing, and there may not be proper open water to use boats. State officials are actually looking into whether they can legally cancel a season because of this type of danger once a gaming or fishing season is printed in their legal guides. This has never happened before.
Sherry McWhorter covers climate and the environment, and she's got plenty to write about with these spring-like conditions in early February. You can read her work at mlive.com. This warm weather has an economic impact as well. MLive reporter Rose White spoke with Upper Peninsula business owners who rely on winter sports and tourism to make a living. You can read that story by going to mlive.com and clicking on the Deeper Dives tab. Gender-affirming healthcare is a topic coming up in politics across the country, and Michigan is no exception. In a public discussion about procedures for minors, several Michigan officials said their end goal is to ban gender-affirming care for anyone over 18, too. MLive's Jordan Hermony covered this story and joins us now. Hi, Jordan.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going well. So tell us where these comments took place and who was involved.
So there were a mixture of state House and Senate leaders from Ohio and Michigan, mostly Michigan, who participated in this thing called an X space. If you remember back when it's effectively a Twitter space, kind of just this open conference call where people can join in with their Twitter followers and speak to a specific issue. In this case, it was meant to be about transgender healthcare policies relating to minor children. But sort of towards the end, it kind of took a turn and the conversation came to gender-affirming care for anyone, as you pointed out, over the age of 18. There was a state House member, Josh Shriver, who made a remark that the end game should be to ban it for pretty much everybody. The comment that he made was more or less, why are we allowing this for anyone over 18? He said it was, quote, harmful across the board. But, you know, so far the literature that we have on gender-affirming care, especially when it comes to adults, by and large, and especially the people who themselves have gone through gender-affirming care, have largely said that it has helped them with their mental space, whether that is socially transitioning, in which case that's, you know, cutting your hair or choosing specific pronouns you'd like to use, changing your name potentially, or there is medically transitioning, which is, I think, where a lot of people's brains go to when we talk about gender-affirming care, the concept of undergoing surgeries so that your physical attributes match the gender that you would like to present as. So it's a little bit of a nuanced topic, which is why there's been so much focus on it recently, is this concept of allowing minors access to gender-affirming care. So when we use that word, again, a lot of people's brains go to the surgical aspect of that, when really gender-affirming care for minors more looks like what I mentioned earlier, the haircutting, the pronoun usage, and in more specific circumstances, the use of puberty blockers, which is where, again, when we talk about a conservative reaction to transgender healthcare, that's where a lot of this concern from Republican lawmakers comes in is sort of banning and curtailing access to hormone replacement therapy for minors, the usage of puberty blockers for minors, and so on and so forth.
And as you mentioned, Republicans from both Michigan and Ohio were involved in this X space and this sort of public discussion. How do those two states differ on legislation regarding gender-affirming care?
So Ohio, actually, earlier this month, banned gender-affirming care for minors outright and restricted the participation of transgender women and girls in sports. That actually was done by overriding a veto on the move from Republican Governor Mike DeWine. Now, Michigan, we do not have any sort of ban on gender-affirming care for minors. We do not have a ban on transgender women and girls participating in school sports. That has been things that we have tried to include before. For instance, in the budgeting process, two of the representatives on the call, one of the individuals hosting it, Representative Brad Paquette, and Senator Lana Tice actually tried to implement as part of the state budget a little while back, tying school funding to schools requiring to ban transgender athletes from participating in girls' sports. There's also been other efforts from, I'm thinking of Paquette more specifically, where he tried to, in May of last year, introduce bills that would ban Michigan doctors from prescribing puberty blockers for individuals under the age of 18 or doing any kind of surgery for transgender youth under the age of 18. Because we have been in a democratically controlled legislature since the start of 2023, if you remember, you know, Dems won control of the state House, Senate, governorship, whole smattering of upper-level state official positions. This has effectively been totally sidelined from the aspect of whether or not this has any chance of getting over the finish line. You know, so if you are of the position, I should say, that transgender healthcare should be accessible, we are far more progressive in that angle than Ohio is.
One of the Michigan officials in this public discussion was State Representative Brad Paquette, who you mentioned. He represents the 37th District near the Indiana border. After the comments made by him and his colleagues were reported, he did give a response. What reasons did Paquette give for supporting a ban on gender-affirming care, full stop?
So his reasoning in this is the concept of the medical doctrine, you know, to do no harm to a patient. So the exact statement that he actually wrote in response to this was first reported by Erin Reed. She is a transgender activist, but also a online journalist through a Substack account that she runs. He basically responded to her saying that it was, Paquette said it was his belief that the government should, quote, be able to uphold the health policy of do no harm to a patient, even if the patient wants to be harmed. Now, this may, I don't want to put words into anybody's mouths, but there are individuals who do believe that being transgender or having gender dysphoria should be more likened to a mental illness. Now, and that is the reason I imagine that that is the do no harm push that Paquette is trying to give. He actually had a longer statement that he posted to his own X account, in which case he said that if gender-affirming care is harmful for children, then, quote, those harmful procedures should be banned in medical practice for all vulnerable patients. He's openly said that he does not believe that any kind of gender-affirming care would give transgender adults the sort of peace that they seek. Now, obviously, transgender adults who do have access to this level of medical care would vehemently disagree. And it's actually even causing something of a rift between the individuals who even were on this original call on X. Now, there was one of the state representatives, Tom Kuntz. He actually disassociated himself from these comments, from specifically Rep. Shriver's ban it for everybody's comments, saying that he was, quote, not interested in banning surgery for adults. He told that to the Michigan Advance earlier this week. But because there is this idea that if we start going down this route of, well, we need to ban these types of surgeries for everyone, carte blanche, where is the line drawn is the question. Does that apply to any kind of plastic surgery? You know, if someone wants to get breast implants, but they are a cisgender woman or a woman who identifies with the gender that she was assigned at birth, you know, could that be banned? Because technically that is sort of the exact same thing that is achieved when you have a transgender woman undergoing, you know, her own kind of gender affirming care, not to the same exact degree. I'm kind of just giving a very broad based overview, but that's sort of the response here is, you know, where does this stop?
We've been hearing from MLive politics reporter Jordan Hermony about statements made by Michigan Republicans on banning gender affirming care. Thanks for your time, Jordan.
Thanks for having me.
The Michigan Wolverines are college football national champions. But just 11 days after their victory parade in Ann Arbor, head coach Jim Harbaugh officially left for the NFL. He'll be coaching the Los Angeles Chargers next season. Harbaugh leaves behind a program that's won three straight Big Ten titles and its first national championship since 1997. But it's also a program still under investigation by the NCAA. Wolverines beat writer Aaron McMahon joins us now to talk about what's next for Michigan football. Hi, Aaron.
Hey, Patrick. Good to be here.
Well, thanks for joining us. So let's start with the new hire. Who will be coaching the Wolverines next season?
Yeah, so his name is Sherrone Moore. He's 37 years old. He's been on the Michigan staff now for 6 years. So anyone who's kind of followed the Michigan football program for a while is probably familiar with him. He started as a tight ends coach when he came in here in 2018, and he's kind of slowly elevated up his way up the coaching staff. He was named offensive line coach a few years later. He was named co-offensive coordinator a year after that and given play calling duties. And then just last year, he was kind of named the primary offensive coordinator. So he was the one running the show. Not only was he running the show, but he ended up being interim head coach for four games while Jim Harbaugh served his six-game suspension. So it was kind of a working audition, so to speak. Michigan athletic director Ward Emanuel said as much just last week. So it was kind of on the job training for him, but he was someone who Jim Harbaugh proudly endorsed after departing.
You mentioned that Sherrone Moore led the Wolverines in some key games while Harbaugh served a suspension. It's a long story, but basically that suspension was related to an ongoing NCAA investigation. Give our listeners a little reminder here. What exactly is the Michigan football program being accused of?
Yeah, two different NCAA investigations. He served a three-game suspension to start the season. That was in regards to a investigation into improper recruiting and improper use of coaches. That suspension was handed down by the university at the very beginning of the year in Athletic Director Ward Emanuel, something Jim couldn't appeal. It was the school's decision, and it was final. He served that three-game suspension during the non-conference portion of the season. And then Jim was hit with a three-game suspension to end the regular season, something that was handed down by the Big Ten in regards to a second separate NCAA investigation into advanced scouting, which basically was in regards to the sign-stealing saga that everyone grew to know. So that came down from the conference. That was appealed by Michigan and its administration. They're not happy about it at the time. Nonetheless, it stood. The Big Ten said that Michigan violated the conference's sportsmanship policy, and that was a result of that.
Now, Aaron, is there any indication that Sherrone Moore was or wasn't involved in this alleged sign-stealing operation?
We don't believe so. There were some rumors going on. Maybe some coaches may have known, some may have not. At this point, we don't know. The NCAA has been investigating. They've been trying to interview coaches. I don't know to the extent or how far they've gotten with that. But right now, as of now, as we talked, today, everything seems to be circled around that one low-level staffer and Connor Stallions, who has since resigned. Now, Sherrone was part of the first investigation into recruiting violations. In fact, he served a one-game suspension at the beginning of the season, during that same time frame that Jim did. He served it. It was part of a negotiated resolution with the NCAA, basically admitting guilt. But by serving that one-game suspension, it's over. The NCAA won't come back and hit him any longer. Now, the question is, yes, what will the NCAA do about the sign-stealing stuff? Because by default, by NCAA rule, if a staffer is hit with a level one violation, the head coach, the person in charge of the program, will face penalty as a result. But now that Jim has left for the NFL, that remains in doubt. We don't know what's going to happen. It's possible the NCAA hands Michigan additional penalties in the form of maybe recruiting bans or scholarship reductions, or they could potentially go as deep as voiding games and voiding wins and voiding titles. I don't think it's going to get that far, but precedent, it's happened before.
Yeah, could you touch on that a little more? What precedent is there for that kind of action from the NCAA, and have there been any similar investigations to compare this one to?
Yeah, there's no similar comparisons. This was an unprecedented thing, the sign stealing stuff. It's something we hadn't really seen. And in fact, you know, when the story broke, I think a lot of folks were wondering, and especially casual fans, what the heck are signs? You know, they thought maybe it was something in the stands or some, you know, obscure thing, but, you know, it was really picking off signals during the middle of games, something that's really happened throughout the history of college football. You know, coaches and players have admitted afterwards, yeah, we stole these team signs. But they tend to happen in games or during games, not going to the unprecedented or extra, you know, ordinary steps of sending friends and colleagues to games of future opponents and doing it. So there's nothing precedented there. But the NCAA in the past has voided seasons, has voided scholarships and taking games. You can point to the SMU stuff, you know, decades ago. When they were literally buying players and going to extra lengths for recruiting purposes. So it's been a long time since the NCAA's gone that far. I don't think they'll do that this year, but, you know, never say never. I think, you know, at the end of the day, that the governing body probably wants to put a halt to this type of stuff. So it wouldn't surprise me if they come down harshly on Michigan. But what that looks like, I just it's hard to say at this point.
We've been hearing from MLive's Aaron McMahon on Michigan's new head football coach, Tyrone Moore, and the sticky situation he's inheriting. You can read Aaron's work at MLive.com/Wolverines. Aaron, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
It was a season to remember for the Detroit Lions, who fell just one game short of the Super Bowl after letting a 17-point lead slip away to the 49ers last Sunday. Check out the Dungeon of Doom podcast to hear analysis on what went wrong in San Francisco and what's next for the Lions. But some good news broke for Lions fans this week as well. Offensive coordinator Ben Johnson has announced he's staying in Detroit next season. It comes as a welcome surprise, as Johnson was one of the NFL's top head coaching prospects. You can hear the latest on that news in a new episode of the Dungeon of Doom early next week. It was a big college hoops week for Michigan. The Spartans beat the Wolverines 81-62 in East Lansing, despite trailing by 2 points at halftime Wednesday night. Check out the post-game episode of the Spartan Confidential podcast for more. Next up for the Spartans is a road game in Maryland Saturday at 5:30, while the Wolverines host Rutgers at 4 p.m. Before that, you can catch the Red Wings as they host the Vancouver Canucks, who sit top of the NHL. The puck drops at 1 p.m. in Detroit. And on Sunday, the Pistons host the Orlando Magic at 3 p.m. That's all for this week. I'm Patrick Shea. Thanks for listening to Michigan News from MLive, and have a great weekend.